What was really fascinating to me was when you had this nexus of customer need, technology to actually solve problems in interesting ways, and the ability to iterate, right? Learn new skills and then unlearn things that actually you thought were correct, but were not actually working. And even as we tried to grow that business and subsequent businesses that I was in, I constantly kept coming up against this pattern that it's not necessarily learning new things is tough, but what's even harder is getting people to unlearn their existing behavior, especially if it had made them successful in the past.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand.Live show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
And welcome back to another episode of the Your Living Brand.Live show. It's Ben Baker, and welcome back, my wonderful audience. Thank you guys for visiting me every single week, for sharing, for commenting on LinkedIn, for emailing me at ben@yourbrandmarketing.com. I love the fact that you guys have been with me for 5 years, and I appreciate everything that you guys do to be part of the community. So thank you for coming back. This week, I've got Barry O'Reilly, and we're going to talk about unlearn, let go of the past success to achieve extraordinary results. That is the name of his book. And I met Barry when I had Bryce Hoffman on my podcast. He says, hey, listen, you got to listen to a couple of my previous episodes. And the first episode I listened to was Barry. So Barry, welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here, Ben. And yeah, no better introduction via Bryce's show. It's a great show.
Now, I'm a podcast addict. I love listening to different podcasters because I always learn something different, you know, different intonation, different types of questions, pacing, you know, different ways of thinking about things. So the more different podcasts I can listen to, the more I'm exposed to different ideas. And I love that.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great philosophy. You know, I think of, I look at my phone here, you know, and I've got like whatever it is, 25 different shows that I love to follow. And sure, I might get to listen to all the episodes, but it's such an interesting way to learn not only how to do your own show, but just learn in general, right? There's just so much great knowledge that people are sharing. And I think there's a certain intimacy as well and focus about listening to a podcast, right? I imagine that many of the listeners are running on a treadmill, you know, walking in a park with their dog, who knows? But for me, it's part of my very important part of actually my growth process. And yeah, delighted to share hopefully some nuggets with your audience and spend some time with you too.
I'm excited about the conversation. And the thing that got me excited was your concept of unlearn. And I'm going to let you explain it because you're going to do a far better job about this than I will. But what I think is, you know, basically what got us to this point may not necessarily move us forward. So why don't you give us a little bit of history of who is Barry, you know, what brought you to this point, and then let's get into the whole unlearn concept.
Yeah, well, I'm a total mongrel. You know, I've done lots of different things over the course of my career. I actually started off as a software engineer. I was worked for a company called CitySearch.com in the late 90s. And that was a company that was born out of Idea Lab, Bill Gross's sort of venture studio. And the idea is that we put people on the internet back in 99. So we'd go around to like a supermarket and a restaurant, take some photos of the restaurant and put like the menu on the internet, and they would have a URL for like $50 a month called benbakersrestaurant.citysearch.com, and people could be on the internet. You know, it was like an amazing thing for them. Our number one competitor was Zip2. Are you familiar with Zip2?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So what reminded you of them? How did you know them?
I came through the high-tech world in the 80s and the 90s. I was one of these people that, you know, in 1987, I was running the mainframe at the University of Victoria, and I built the first Mac lab. So I started in the technology game, you know, very early on. I mean, in 1984, we had the first Mac SE in Western Canada. So I remember poring over the PC magazines, you know, what was next? Who was doing what? What was going on? So I was just one of those kids that was always looking to say, okay, this is going somewhere. I have no idea where it's going to go. I mean, I started in the days of listserv, you know, and learning Fortran and COBOL. So where you're coming from was the next logical step. For me, it was just exciting.
Yeah, no, it was, you know. So we were building City Search, and Zip2 was Elon Musk's first company.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sort of battling it out for this sort of taking on this online directory. We were going to actually merge at one point, but it didn't work out. And I often joke, I don't know what happened to Elon, but here I am on your show. And
well, we'll get him on next week. I'm sure it's a phone call we can make. No problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And yes, but like that gave me my start, right? And what was really fascinating to me was when you had this nexus of customer need, technology to actually solve problems in interesting ways, and the ability to iterate, right? Learn new skills and then unlearn things that actually you thought were correct, but were not actually working. And even as we tried to grow that business and subsequent businesses that I was in, I constantly kept coming up against this pattern that it's not necessarily learning new things is tough, but what's even harder is getting people to unlearn their existing behavior, especially if it had made them successful in the past. And you see this a lot in startups where, you know, initially the thing that makes a startup successful going from 0 to 1 is not the thing that makes it successful going from 1 to 3 and 3 to 5 and 5 to 15. And right. So you're constantly on this journey of evolution about adapting to changing circumstances and new markets that you operate in. And that's true of your product, but it's also true of people. So the leadership required to bring a company from 0 to 1 is very different than the leadership required to bring it from 5 to 50. And these are some of the things that you start thinking about. And what I kept seeing again and again with, and I've worked with some phenomenal leaders, and there's case studies from in the book from Capital One, American Airlines, British Airways, Wells Fargo, Spotify, Slack, all these phenomenal companies and phenomenal leaders, is that I just kept coming up against this pattern that learning new things was tough, but was even harder was getting people to let go of their existing behavior and thinking because it had brought them success to date. And that necessarily wasn't going to be the thing that guaranteed them success in the future. So how could they recognize those limiting beliefs and behaviors and essentially unlearn?
It's fascinating when you think about that, because as an entrepreneur, as you're starting a company, you become successful. If you become successful, you become successful. And you say, all right, it's these policies, it's these procedures, it's this way of thinking, it's this way of dealing with the customer, it's this way of dealing with vendors, it's this type of marketing, it's this type of branding. All this has made me successful. And then you reach to a point where you hit this glass ceiling and you have absolutely no idea why you can't move any further. And that's a frustration point for more entrepreneurs than I know of, because they constantly sit there and go, why isn't this working anymore? Why is everything that's made me successful, everything that's worked up to this point in time, as I'm trying to get bigger, as I'm trying to go from 100 to 500 people or 50 million to 100 million, why is this not working the way it did when I was the $30 million company? And that's got to lead to a lot of frustration for a lot of CEOs and a lot of leaders.
Yeah, no, absolutely, right? But it's a feedback mechanism, right? Like this is the point, is that it's an obstacle that you're not being able to get past. And try as you might, with all the behaviors that you've used that have brought you the success that you're experiencing, they're not going to be the thing that helps you pass through the challenge that you're trying to get to the next level, right? And it's funny, like even when I talk to people about unlearning, a lot of the time they actually get very agitated or almost defensive about it, right? They sort of like, well, what are you saying? Everything that I know is wrong. And nothing could be further from the truth. Now, the way I describe unlearning is it's a process of letting go or reframing and moving away from once useful mindsets and acquired behaviors that were effective in the past, but now limit our success. So it's not forgetting, removing, or discarding your knowledge or experience. It's the conscious act of letting go of outdated information and actively engaging and taking in new information to inform your decision-making and action. And when you start to think of it more like a system where you're able to diagnose when your current behavior or thinking is actually limiting your success and then reframing the outcome that you're aiming for and relearning new behaviors to try and get you to this next level or this next outcome that you want to achieve, that in itself is a huge breakthrough. And then people are encouraged to experiment, to try new behaviors, uncomfortable behaviors that they mightn't be familiar with, what could be the answer to get them the breakthrough that they're looking for. And what I've constantly learned is unlearning is not sort of like a one and done process. It's a system. It's continuous. So when you learn to sort of unlearn one problem, then you suddenly have a system to start tackling numerous problems. And that's where it starts to get really fascinating and interesting.
So let's address the elephant in the room, and that's fear. I mean, people are afraid of change. People are terrified of the unknown. People are scared of the dark. People are scared of what's around the corner. People are scared of making that one mistake that is going to take them from being a successful business to a hugely unsuccessful business. And it all comes down to risk and not understanding what they don't understand. So how do we get people who have become very comfortable with either a lifestyle or a style of business or a methodology or a set of processes to be able to sit there and say, okay, if I want to get to the next level, I need to be able to give up control, or I need to be able to give up the thought process and build a new set of systems or think slightly differently to be able to move me over that hump. So how do we address that fear, that uncertainty, that comfortableness that people have that keep them from moving forward and wanting to move forward?
Yeah, so like there's a number of characteristics that I talk a lot about that people have to develop to be successful as they unlearn. The first one is curiosity, right? And if you're not open to taking in new information that goes against your existing thinking, you're going to struggle, right? And it's funny, like if I ask people, are you curious? Very rarely do I have anyone say no, right? Everyone thinks they're curious. But then I give people examples like, well, you know, what happens if you're working with someone more junior than you and you give them a problem to solve and they start solving it in a different way that you would do it? What's your initial reaction? And most people sort of smile and laugh and go, oh yeah, that they're doing it wrong. And I'm like, yeah, right. That's a good example of you shutting yourself down from new ways of working. Right. One of my favorite people to work with is a guy called Joe Narenya. He was the COO of HSBC Global Markets. And what Joe would do was sit down with the graduates every year when they came into the company, and he'd give them problems to work on that he was working on just to see how they would solve them. And by just immersing himself with these sort of people who are thinking in a different way, new tools, new technologies, he would learn all these new skills, right? But you imagine the cultural artifact that creates in a sort of hierarchical company like a HSBC, right? Where you've got some of the most senior people sitting with the most junior people and learning or unlearning from them, right? Fascinating. And the next one is commitment. And that's the ability for people to commit to doing things that they're not going to be good at. Often the thing that's going to give us a breakthrough is a new behavior. We'd like to stick to the behaviors that we know. So to your point, we avoid risk, right? That's our natural inclination. But actually the commitment part is you've got to commit to trying things that you're not going to be good at and deliberately practice them to try and get better and take on more difficult tasks, right? And that's when you start getting into this realm then of understanding comfort or comfortable with being uncomfortable. Because all growth happens outside your comfort zone, right? So if you're not progressively practicing getting outside your comfort zone and trying things that are new that you're not good at and struggling and finding a way to improve, that actually is a muscle that you need to be working on. And the way you develop that muscle is you create safety to succeed, right? And we talk a lot in the book about this idea of thinking big, but starting small so you can learn fast what works for you or not. So thinking big is important because you need to have big, bold aspirations to sort of break you free of your existing behavior. But you don't think big and start big. You think big and start small. So you can sort of, and the power of starting small is it creates safety, right? There's psychological safety. If you make small errors or mistakes in front of your peers, they're recoverable, right? You can talk to people to say, I'm trying something new here. Probably going to suck at it. Let's see what happens.
But like, I guess it also gives you that sense of accomplishment. Having those small successes gives you impetus to try different things as well.
Right. Like this is the power of small, right? It creates fast feedback loops. So you can learn fast what works and what doesn't. And if it's working, you can celebrate the success. And if it's not, you don't need to beat yourself up too much about the failure and see it as a feedback mechanism to say, right, that didn't work. What's the next thing I'm going to try? Right. And get into that habit of trying things. Right. And that's why this notion of think big, start small, learn fast is a real mantra of what unlearning is about. and a system to sort of explore uncertainty and risk in a controlled manner. And that actually has been, like, I can't tell you how many people send me messages going, think big, start small. Like, it's, they love it. It's a way for us to start tackling these things and learning to unlearn.
Hi, everyone. Do you want to be your best customer's vendor of choice? Do you want to cement relationships with them, add real value, and gain insights that your competitors just can't get? Go to podcasthostforhire.com. That's podcasthostforhire.com. And let's work together to make you the value vendor of choice. I love it, you know, because it's the curiosity factor to be able to sit there and go, okay, this is how I would solve it, but let's see how other people would. There's a woman that I knew by the name of Nancy Richardson, and she was with Lululemon at the time. I don't know where Nancy is today, but she was with Lululemon, and her thing was she wanted to give people safe space to fail. Her job was to give people behind her who were part of her team safe space to fail. It says, I'll protect you. Try this. Take this on. Try this initiative. Here's some things that you can do on your own. Figure it out. Let's learn from it. And she celebrated both the successes and the failures equally. And it was an amazing thing to be able to watch the people that were part of her teams grow because they had the permission to fail and they had the permission to try and they had the permission to be curious. So I love that whole philosophy.
Yeah. And like, this is the thing I think often catches people out is that failure and success are just feedback. Right? Success is you moved in the direction you hoped, and failure is you didn't go in the direction you hoped, right? It's just like, if you can start to like devolve yourself away from sort of beating yourself up or feeling your identity has been destroyed because something you tried didn't work out, you need to start thinking of it more of a process, right? It's a learning process of attempting things to see, are we moving the desired direction of the outcome we're aiming for, or are we moving away from it? And both are just signals. And, you know, that's one of the things that really helped me a lot because, you know, I've started a bunch of businesses. I'm building a venture studio where we're trying to build 100 companies over the next 5 years at Nobody Studios. We are going to get a lot of things wrong. And actually, we want to get things wrong as quickly and cheaply and as fast as possible so we can get back onto the right path of where we want to go. Right. That's what entrepreneurialism is. It's taking risk. It's a life of risk and managing risk and trying to start to understand, can we solve the problems we want to solve? So I'd really encourage your listeners, look, failing sucks. Don't get me wrong. I hate it. It drives me nuts. It's really painful. It hurts my identity. Yeah, it can. But again, that's why starting small is so important because it allows you to explore uncertainty in a controlled manner. Right, small steps to give you confidence that you're moving in the right direction or the wrong direction and adapting. And I think that's really, really important, especially as you try to grow your own personal skills or you try to encapsulate it in products that you're trying to build.
So how do we grow leaders that are comfortable enough with their own abilities to unlearn and to teach others how to unlearn? Because a lot of this comes down to, if you are comfortable in your own skin, if you're comfortable with the fact that if I fail, if I don't succeed, it's not the end of the world, it's a learning experience. And by my team failing, they're not failing. All they're doing is finding something that didn't work so we can move quicker towards something that is going to. That's a skill. That's a very deliberate skill that a lot of people don't have. You know, a lot of people point fingers and lay blame and send out pink slips and, you know, raise their voice and do all sorts of things other than sit there and say, okay, let's look at a different way of doing this. Let's learn from the experience and be able to move on and be able to unlearn so you can relearn. How do we build leaders and cultures to be able to allow that to be able to happen? Because it doesn't happen everywhere.
No, it doesn't, right? But the first step is actually designing those experiences or those opportunities. Right. Like one of the most important things, and we, like, I do this in Nobody Studios all the time, right? There's a bunch of people joining the studio, giving them opportunities, maybe first time entrepreneurs, first time founders, first time everything, right? Even the studio is the first time the thing that we've ever done. And a lot of it is a learning process, right? So I find like a lot of my role as a chief incubation officer there is to create controlled experiments for people to try new things, to like learn new behaviors. I'll give you a simple example, right? So we were doing portfolio reporting this week, looking across all the different companies in the portfolio, finding out a great way to report progress on how each one of them is doing, and then create a portfolio report. So anybody who's part of the studio is able to see every single company that we're working on and even dive in to look at each individual company and look at it. Now, how do you write reports that people will understand and are meaningful and successful? Well, we have a few ideas about what those reports could look like. So we got the team together and we debated about what information we thought was the most interesting or the most important, what was common that should be across all the different companies and maybe what's unique. And we sort of came up with a prototype for what the report might be. I was like, great. All right, well, let's try it. Let's ship this report this week and see what feedback we get. And sure enough, you know, people were nervous, like, is this the right information? Is it too much? Is it too little? But we just put it out into the world, right? And we got great feedback. People were like, I love this, but it's missing that. I love that report on how fast the team is going, but what are they working on next? Or that's a really interesting growth model, but how do you plan to, you know, what investments need to be made to get us there? So it started allowed the team to start owning creating those reports themselves and then getting feedback on them. So now we're next week, I'm like, great, how are we going to make this better? You know, we've done one rep and it was a decent rep, but how do we do the next rep? And again and again and again. And if we build this culture, this mechanism into encouraging people to like just make it a good enough that you're willing to show it to people to get feedback, get 80% good enough, understand that it's never going to be perfect, but understand it can get better. And it just starts the process. So now we're already building this culture of learning into our company where everyone who has to write a simple report is feeling comfortable to experiment, maybe put on a new thing in their report each week or something that's a little bit different that might be topical, but they're learning how to iterate, to try things, to get feedback, and they're encouraged to, right? And we believe in the studio, if we keep instilling that value into the way people work, whether it's reporting, whether it's new features, whether it's talking to customers, that will help us be successful. And yeah, that's just the mentality of how the team works. And it's exciting.
And it is exciting because, as you said, you created a report and you knew it wasn't perfect. You knew as it went out the door, it wasn't perfect.
That's
but you sat there and said, at least it's out the door. At least here, go and break this. Go break this. Tell me what you like about it. Tell me what you don't like about it. Tell me how you can make it better. And 15 people looking at this report are going to have 15 different ideas about how to make it better. And you may take all of those ideas. You may take some of those ideas. You may take none of those ideas. But all you're going to do is keep iterating and not being so scared of shipping something that isn't perfect that nothing ever gets shipped.
Absolutely. You know, and again, the most important thing to your point before is that people aren't afraid to try things, that they feel like they have agency. And that, I believe, will encourage them to keep trying things, keep making it better. And yeah, I think once we create that as a mechanism, I believe we're going to be undefeatable because we have built this system to constantly iterate, test and learn and figure out what is going to work and what's better.
So how do we get people to unlearn where there isn't a culture of empowerment? Go ahead.
Yeah, so there's a series of questions that I ask people to help them sort of diagnose. The first question I always ask people is, can you think of a situation or area where you're not living up to the expectations you have for yourself? Maybe you're not achieving the results that you're aiming for. Maybe there's a situation that you're struggling with or you're avoiding altogether. Or maybe you've tried everything that you can think of and you're still not getting a breakthrough. So not living up to the outcomes you're aiming for, not achieving your expectations of yourself, situations you're avoiding or struggling with, or tried everything that you can think of and not getting a breakthrough. Now, when I ask people those questions, it's not a case of one thing popping up. It's like about 10 things start popping up in their mind. And again, this is sort of like this feedback mechanism that tells you the reason I'm experiencing these obstacles is because my existing behavior is not working. That's why there's this sort of loggerhead. So really, that gives you a directionally, these are some of the obstacles I need to address. And when you can identify those obstacles or diagnose them, then it's really just about reframing the obstacle as the outcome that you're really aiming for, and then coming up with ways that you can start to experiment with new behaviors to achieve that outcome. I'll give you a simple example of myself, book writing, right? Like, book writing is one of those things I think, you know, I certainly was like, wow, imagine one day I wrote a book. That'd be sort of a nice accomplishment in life, right? And
it was daunting the first time, wasn't it? It was extremely daunting.
It continues to be. Yeah. But like, I had a solid history of D minuses in English literature, right? I'm dyslexic. I still believe if my English teacher knew that I've written two books, never mind one book, they wouldn't even believe it. And for me, I was like, wow, that's something other people would do, because I'll never be able to do that. And it was kind of funny then, right? And one of these things then it got me thinking, or when I did say, right, I'm going to try and write a book. This is a challenge I'm going to set myself. And I started sort of replicating what I thought writers did, you know, and I always had this vision of like sitting in a purple velvet jacket by a roaring fire with a red wine, and writers just like Hemingway, just turning out these pages. And so that's what I tried to do. I sat by a lot of fires, drank a lot of wine, tried to write. Didn't work out so well for me.
Hopefully, but you had good wine at least.
Always. That's what always made me feel better, at least, right? So I was doing these behaviors that I sort of thought were the way that you write and having no success. And I was sort of like, oh, failing in a way. It's like, oh, I'm not meant to ever be a writer. But then I started to think about, well, this is actually just not working for me. This behavior of typing to try and create a book is not working for me. So that's my obstacle. But what is the outcome I want? Now, and it got me thinking about, well, a book is just content. And actually, there's many ways to create content. Writing is just one behavior to create content. And actually, the easiest way, or more natural way for me to create content, is not typing. It's actually talking. So what I did is I got a journalist to start interviewing me. And what we would do is I would bullet out these points that I want to make in a chapter. And the journalist would interview me, and we would record the interview and transcribe it using an automation service, like really fast.
Yeah.
So after an interview, we'd have like 10,000, 15,000 words transcribed in minutes. The journalist would edit it, as a journalist would edit content, and then ship me this like MVP, or this minimum viable chapter, literally within like 2 or 3 hours. And then I had something to react to and start going, no, that's not what I mean to say there. And this is actually missing here. And I was iterating really fast. And that's actually how I wrote, if I even wrote a book on Learn, is that I talked it all. And so that was like a great example of this sort of unlearning, that I thought you had to type to write, but actually for me, it was about talking and then editing. And then, you know, the result of that is this book that exists in the world today. And, you know, it's been translated into numerous different languages and just released in Chinese this week. It's phenomenal, right? But I didn't type a word of it. I talked it all.
And that's, you know, phenomenal, because I have a similar experience. My first book, I wrote it with a keyboard, 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours at night, for 45 days straight, and just typed. You know, it was a stream of consciousness. It was just, I don't think I even wrote notes. I think it was just one of those stream of consciousness. And then it took me 8 or 9 months to edit it, to get it to the point where I was ready to, you know, put it out the door. The second book I did was a series of podcasts. My partner and I, we did 16 podcast interviews where we talked for an hour each one. You're right. We took it, we put it into the transcription software. We edited it down. We, you know, tore out sections. We added sections, but you had that back and forth piece to it. And it was written completely differently. And both of them are quite good for what they are. They are great books. You know, they're insightful, they're thought-provoking, and I'm proud of both of them. And they're written completely differently. And it's brought me to think, and it's, you know, it's where my thought process is, this is, we need to not be limited to think that, well, I've always got to do this way, that there's only one way of doing anything, because I don't believe that that's true. So how do we move people beyond the thought to sit there and go, wait a second here, there is another way to tackle this problem? How do we get people to believe that they're allowed to experiment, they're allowed to try, that they're given permission to do something in ways that nobody else has done it? It doesn't make it wrong. It just means let's try it a different way.
Yeah. And like, yeah, your story is a testament to that. right? And I think that's sort of like part of the fun, right? Is figuring it out, you know, like what's the answer? How does the equation balance? Is this the right equation to write? Should I come up with a new hypothesis? Like, that's what's kind of fun for me anyway, about life and growth and experimentation, is trying all these different things, because you just never know what's going to work. And if you sort of go with it with that curiosity in a way, yeah, you're going to have moments where you fall flat on your face and you think you're a failure and why did you bother doing all this? And it was a big waste of time. And then you're going to have moments where you write a book because you talk to people back and forth and it's out there in the world and it blows your mind how that was achieved in not the way I thought it would happen. And I think that's, there's something really fascinating about that.
So I want to be wary of our time because we're coming into an end here. Is there one thing that you want to emphasize about end learning that we haven't talked about? Is there one thing that you sit there and say, is there's an aha moment that is really going to give people some insights that we haven't discussed yet?
Yeah. So the encouragement I would give people is it's actually not that hard to start. One of the little tools that one of my coaches, Sabrina Braham, gave to me was, she was like, you know, maybe, right, you want to figure out how to unlearn? Try this. Right, go and find somebody that you trust, someone that you know, a peer, someone that you work with on a regular frequency. And I want you to go and ask them, even tell them that you're trying to unlearn some behaviors that you think you need to unlearn, and ask them, can they think of any behaviors that they are observing you that, you know, you might want to unlearn? And they might be kind enough to give you a few examples. Pick one of them that you actually agree with and you really want to unlearn. Right, and pick that, and then ask them on a scale of 1 to 10, and say, right, maybe they say it's giving feedback, right? And then on a scale of 1 to 10, ask them, well, how good am I at this? And hopefully they're honest and kind, and they'll tell you that you're a 4 out of 10, and you're like, brilliant, thank you, I'm a 4. How do I get to 4.5 in the next week? What are some things that I could try in the next week to go from 4 to 4.5? And, you know, hopefully they'll be kind enough to give you some ideas again. And I want you to pick one of them that sort of feels slightly uncomfortable, not totally out of your, just slightly uncomfortable, and practice it for a week. And then at the end of that week, go back to that friend, that peer, whoever it may be, and say to them, hey, I've been trying to unlearn using the suggestions you've made. On a scale of 1 to 10, where do you think I am now? And maybe they might go, actually, you're a 6. And you're like, brilliant. Okay, how can I get 0.5 better next week? Do you have any other? And if you get into that habit of constantly experimenting, trying things, you'll be amazed by the results.
I love it. Small incremental changes, small wins, small losses, evaluate change, move forward. I love it. Barry, yeah, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so I'm available on all good internet stores at barryoreilly.com. You can find me pretty much on most social media accounts at that handle. If you're interested in what we're building at Nobody Studios, please check us out at nobodystudios.com. We're about to launch an equity crowdfunding. It's the first ever venture studio to ever let retail investors or people on the high street be able to own a piece of the venture studio. So if you are interested in what we're building, check us out. And if you're even more interested, you're welcome to come and invest with us. Yeah, I'm very excited about the future. I think the world is changing very fast. Just some really interesting things ahead. And I'm looking forward to helping people build them. So thanks for having me on the show, Ben, and look forward to staying in touch with you and your listeners and seeing how I can help.
Perfect. And one last question I always ask before I let you out the door, and this is it. As you leave a meeting and you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
You know, it's really funny. One of the things that I actually want them to think less about me, but more about the moment, is how can we make it better next time? What's like one little thing that we can introduce into that interaction to make it better next time? And for me, that's sort of the premise that I love people to be left with thinking about, is not like what about Barry, or but the interactions we have, how can we make it a little bit better next time? And when everyone's thinking like that, the quality and the performance just goes up and up and up and up and up. So every time we have a meeting at Nobody, I'm always thinking, or even trying to suggest to folks, what's one thing we can do next time to make this better? And if we get into that habit, the sky's the limit really about where we can get to. So yeah, that's my answer.
I love it. Let's all get a little bit better every single day. So be critical, get a little uncomfortable, and, you know, let's unlearn. Barry, thank you for being such an amazing guest.
Yeah, no, pleasure, Ben. Thanks for having me.
This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at yourlivingbrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?